Alrighty, we're going to get started here today. My name is Andrew Kuhn from Focus Compounding, joined by Jeff Gannon, and we're going to be talking about our plan for Parks America. As probably most people listening are aware, we are the largest shareholder in Parks America, and we are in the middle of a proxy fight. The record date for the annual meeting is May 13th. Today is May 8th. And then the actual vote itself is June 6th. We put out a plan through a PR today. You could go to prkaproxyfight.com to get access to that. It's also on the homepage. You could go to our Twitter at Focus Compound and find it. And I'm also going to link to it below if anybody wants to get access to that and actually read the plan. But it's just a simple, basic plan of how we're thinking about capital allocation and the business going forward. If voted in, we are nominating four directors. So if you are a shareholder and you want to get more information on that, you can reach out to our proxy guy, John Grau. I will put all of his information in the description below. But again, key dates to remember. Today is May 8th. The record date is May 13th, and the actual vote itself is June 6th. So, Jeff, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing?
Good. Doing well. Good. Doing well. So we put out this plan, Jeff, and it talks about our philosophy, how we're thinking about Parks America. And the first part is to return capital to shareholders, and we're going to do this in two phases. So I will let you take the microphone, even though we both have microphones, and we'll go from there.
Sure. So the two phases are basically the difference between ongoing cash build over time. This is more what people would expect normally. That's how dividends and buybacks and things are funded. And that's phase two. Phase one is the initial return of capital phase, right? Because this company's overcapitalized. So just some background on that. The company has about 1,000 acres of land that don't produce any earnings. All of the earnings come from a portion, about half, of the land in Georgia. And they have three parks. Two of those parks, one in Texas called Aggieland and one in Missouri, don't make any money. The one in Georgia makes the money, right? And as a result, you have, as of the time that we're recording this, you have a company with about 76 million shares outstanding. And we said, I think the price we used 38 cents or something. It's in that neighborhood, around 40 cents a share or something. So based on that, you have a market cap of, let's say, $30 million or something dollars. And you have a balance sheet of about $20 million. And you have of that equity being maybe $15 million. But it's overcapitalized to the tune of maybe 7 to $19 million, something in that neighborhood, 8 to $20 million, whatever, in that neighborhood. So basically, all that you see listed there as like tangible equity isn't really needed to make any earnings. That's actually all tied up in these things that don't produce any earnings, which is basically Aggieland and Missouri. You can see what the original purchase prices were. Let's go with like that the amount tied up in each is 7 or 8 million in Aggieland, 2 to 3 plus million in Missouri. It depends on how much CapEx and stuff they put in each year. So what we're talking about in phase one is selling those parks and returning the capital to shareholders. That's a one-time thing because the company is overcapitalized with a bunch of stuff tied up in things that make no earnings whatsoever. So like Aggieland has been around now since 2020. They've owned it. The park actually predates that a bit. And cumulatively doesn't generate any earnings or free cash flow for them. Missouri's even older. We're going back like 15 years or something, and cumulatively does not generate any earnings and free cash flow. So this, all the earnings and free cash flow comes from Georgia. So phase two is really about the earnings from Georgia being paid out. Phase one is about slimming the company down to what the balance sheet should look like. And so that's a big one-time. It'll actually be a couple events. We say multiple one-time events. So it'll probably be two or three events of the actual payouts of it. And those payouts may come in the form of stock buybacks, which would be tender offers, because stock's highly liquid. There's no way to buy back in the market. And special dividends, right? And then the other thing to keep in mind is that these subsidiaries in Texas and Missouri have never really earned money and were purchased at pretty high prices versus their market value today, pretty similar prices. So there isn't really there won't be a meaningful tax impact here. What I'm saying is what you see them on the balance sheet at is a pretty good estimate of what they would be sold for and paid out in terms of buybacks and dividends. So the numbers we're talking about with phase one are basically all funded with those two parks being sold off. And then also what we'll discuss is the possibility of having net debt on Georgia, which the company obviously doesn't have right now, in part because the poor performance of the two other parks, and that's where a lot of the capital is tied up, whereas after this, the capital won't be tied up in those things. So those are the differences. Two parks to be sold and money to be borrowed, and that's where that would fund all of the phase one stuff. And then phase two is funded based on earnings going forward. That's much more normal. People expect, okay, they use buybacks and dividends are from their earnings each year. That's phase two. So the phase one is the initial one-time stuff. Phase two is the ongoing stuff. So with phase one, the two unprofitable parks, which we just discussed, they obviously won't be sold on the same day and stuff, right? So it'll depend on how long it takes and how big each one is. Missouri is quite small compared to the company's total balance sheet and stuff. And so we're talking about something which is, you know, it is less than 20% or something of certainly the market cap and often of the balance sheet, right? So if you sell Missouri first, you may not immediately have an event that pays out and stuff. It would depend on the company's seasonal cash build and all of that. Because these will be consolidated into a few events, like I said. I don't think more than three. And then Aggieland, obviously, there would probably be an event after that. So Aggieland is like, that's a very big item for the company. It's more than a third of the company's balance sheet. It's a huge amount of the company's equity, and it's still a good chunk of the market cap and stuff. So that's something where a quarter of the value of the company in the market would be liquidated in, like, you know, whenever that happened where you sold Aggieland. So that would probably be more a trigger for actually the large tender or dividend happening sometime around then. And then the other one that is leverage to Georgia. That's something that probably won't be done immediately. It's something that might happen more after other parks are sold and there's some cash on the balance sheet and stuff. It's much easier to be in that situation to do that. And Georgia needs to be improved too. But the main thing is getting cash inflows from Aggieland and Missouri sales before you can do that part of it. And then what we talked about is paying out all cash beyond what's needed to maintain a prudent leverage ratio. We just gave it as an example, 3x net debt really to EBITDA. And that's just talking about the Georgia park. That's not a prudent level if you own parks that aren't very good, like Aggieland in Missouri, but it's a normal level in the industry for people to use when you have a park that makes money every year. On that basis, though, I do want to mention that that will be obviously a net debt situation, and people should not assume that it would ever be that the company will be run down to the point where it has almost no cash, and then it borrows, you know, debt, where say if you wanted to have $2 million in net debt or something, you would never have $2 million in debt and $0 almost in cash. What you'd have is $5 million in debt and $3 million in cash, and the debt would be due over a period of several years, and the cash would be in something that like matures every 3 months, like T-bills or something. So that's really how it would be. You would never get down to running the cash levels that low. In fact, we wouldn't run the cash levels lower than the company runs them now. The company would be more leveraged than it is now, but it'd be more liquid than it is now. They actually run it with lower liquidity than we would, but also lower leverage.
And then pay out all cash beyond what's needed to maintain that prudent leverage ratio. Right?
Yep. So that's where people figure that out to understand how big could phase one be, right? Here we say phase one, is expected to be no less than 10 cents per share and no more than 25 cents per share. And the stock, like we said, is maybe 38 cents or something right now. So that's round numbers. It's actually a little bit bigger than 25 to 65% of the current market cap. That's not a bad guess, but that's a very wide range, right? So that's based on just things that are pretty certain that even if a bunch of things change in the world, would happen fairly soon. Whereas in other stuff, right, the financing environment changes dramatically. You know, the Fed raised rates a lot in the past few years. What if rates doubled again from here? Then that would make it harder to do deals and things. And so it could slow down how quickly things are sold and for what amounts and stuff. But the low end of that range is, you know, very achievable and very fastly achievable. So the higher end could take a little bit longer to happen. But like I said, it's a one-time thing, and it would obviously be funded. People can do the math between those three things. So it depends on the EBITDA of Georgia, because obviously that's what's going to be used. That's what anyone's going to be looking at in terms of financing it. Any bank is going to look at what's the EBITDA of the good park that way. And then the other two, what are the sale prices of them, right? And then the net proceeds of that. There'll be some costs associated with selling, closing, and selling off parks. But for the most part, it's not too unrealistic to think that the numbers you see in accounting terms on the balance sheet and stuff are pretty close to what it would net out to be, that some items will come in a little bit stronger than you might expect when liquidating them, and that will offset some of the costs of liquidation. So those are pretty good guesses from that. So you can see that most of what I'm talking about, the 10 to 25 cents per share, or the 25 to 65% market cap, however you want to say it, is basically just when and for how much Aggieland and Missouri are each sold. Aggieland being about possibly 2.5 times more important than Missouri in terms of that mix, right? It's not a 50-50 mix. It's a little more important what Aggieland goes for than Missouri. And then we just talk about what the actual way it will be paid out is, right? So it'll be paid out is probably two different ways. Stock buyback, which would be a tender in this case, because there's no market for the stock. There's no liquid market, you know, that you can go out and buy regularly in the market. And then special dividends, not regular dividends. And there would probably be one tender offer. I don't know that that's definitely only be one, but probably, because you would be able to gauge what interest it is in selling the stock from that one tender offer, and shouldn't expect the shareholder base will turn over enough that it would matter that you get a very different response from another tender offer. And then you probably have one or two special dividends. With the tender offer, it's worth keeping in mind that you have a major shareholder in us. We own close to 40%. We own about 38.5% of the stock. And then you also have another shareholder who we have no idea what that major shareholder would do. He owns about 30% of the company. He may really want to sell out, or he may want to, you know, really hang on to his shares no matter what the price. Depending on that, that means that the tender offer would obviously be targeted at everyone else who might want to participate, because we presumably would not participate in a tender offer. I mean, we wouldn't do a tender offer unless we thought it was a good deal for continuing shareholders. So we wouldn't be participating in the tender in selling our shares into it, which means that the bang for your buck you would get is much bigger in that, say, you went to buy back 25% of a market cap. Well, if half of the people aren't participating, that means that you, the people who are participating, could sell like half of your shares into it, right? On like a pro rata basis. So you have to figure that it really depends on like whether you want to call it the float or whatever participates in it. That's what really has the impact. So, you could fulfill a lot of a tender offer with not that much in relative percentage to the market cap, because you have some big owners who maybe don't want to participate in it. Dividends are different. Dividends have to be that everyone has to participate equally in them, right? So it's totally different. It means that you will get less bang for your buck on the dividends. Not that it's not worth it. It might really work out well. But if what you're looking for is liquidity and everything, those dividends will also be paid to the big shareholders, us, Chuck, the 30% owner and stuff. So really, you know, 3/4 of the dividends will end up going to the really big shareholders, whereas a lot of the buyback could go to the smaller shareholders. So if the stock price cooperates, right, it's in a range that is reasonable or cheap or something, then a buyback would be a really great way of doing it. But if the stock goes crazy and stays up there, then unfortunately that's not going to be a possibility, right? So that's why there are these two different ways of doing it. It depends on the price. And it's very possible that the price will not be cooperative afterwards. Because people can see what the stock has done in the past, when it's run up, when it's run down, why it does that. It's a little bit of a possibility that after we win the election to a majority at the annual meeting and have this plan out there, that the stock would be more likely to be more expensive on average than if we didn't. And so that would make it possibly more skewed towards dividends than buybacks. But if the stock doesn't get too expensive and stay too expensive, then buybacks would be the preferred thing, obviously. Works much better for the smaller shareholders. And then phase two, so after that part that we can control, this is where we talk about the Georgia park and what to do with that. So Georgia, we're putting someone in Georgia, and they're going to run that as a subsidiary separate from the holding company thing, and we'll get into that. But what that means is that that'll be run on its own with the goal of improving EBITDA as much as possible, right? And so there's a few reasons why you do that. One, we said we might borrow, and there's discussion, you know, that we have that here in this slide. That's the amount that you borrow is tied usually a lot to EBITDA. So higher EBITDA over time gives you more borrowing capacity usually. Another reason is higher EBITDA just translates into higher free cash flow on average, right? And then the third one is a lot of buyers look at EBITDA when they're saying, how much do I want to buy something for a performing park? For your Aggieland and your Missouri, they don't. They say, here's all the land and stuff, and that's what they're interested in. That's the highest and best use of it. But for a profitable park, it depends a lot on EBITDA. So any exit that you have, any way to extract value over time, whether it's that you borrow and use that money for other things, you know, or whether it's that you pay that out in dividends or buybacks or whatever, or whether it's selling the entire thing, all of those depend a lot on getting EBITDA up quickly and to higher levels than it's been before, right? And so that's what the focus would be on. Now, separate from that, something we really do not control is what kind of multiples people will pay in terms of EBITDA. So there's times in an industry, it could be because of what financing is available, it could be about optimism or pessimism in the industry, it could be about other things that are going on for those potential buyers in the rest of their portfolio. Sometimes they're willing to bid a pretty high amount and sometimes a lot lower amount. A lot of it has to do with access to capital, because a lot of buyers of something like Georgia would prefer to do it with a lot of debt relative to equity. That's usually the way they think, a lot more than we would, right? We'd operate with more equity than they would. So it will depend on that. And in a year where the offers are poor, then we would definitely hold on to the park, right? But if there's a more, the animal spirits are high, people are willing to bid a lot for that kind of asset, then that's a possibility where you have it sold. Right. So based on what we know today and stuff, I think the expectation for phase two would be that we would retain the Georgia Park and improve it at least for a period of several years and maybe beyond that. It could be held indefinitely unless we get into an environment where people are more willing to bid the way they were a few years ago and not too long ago, that people are pretty optimistic on this industry. But there, you know, that was more around the COVID time. Right. That's when there was a lot of excitement. And so it's less so today. So if we do enter a phase like that, then you might get a great offer in terms of a high multiple. And then we would sell if we had a high multiple, right? But we're not going to sell at an average to low multiple. So there's no urgency in selling off Georgia, which is a producing asset. That would be something that would make a ton of sense to retain. There is urgency on selling things that suck up money, as do Aggieland and Missouri. But Georgia throws off cash over time. And so it's not a bad asset to hold. And then, as we said there, what we're talking about in phase two, let's assume you don't sell Georgia initially, which I think is the much more likely scenario, just unless there's bidders for the company and stuff that we don't know about. We're not on the inside, so we don't know. But assuming that, then what you would do is you would hold on to Georgia for a while you try to improve the EBITDA numbers. And while you were doing that, you would pay out a special dividend. Now here, we're calling it a special dividend because it's not quarterly and it's not set at one level that then you expect to be repeated all the time. But in reality, it's pretty regular in that it's really being funded by what is the free cash flow coming off of Georgia and stuff and paying that out. And so what that would really have to do with is just, here's a debt level that you feel is okay. As you said, it's an example. It's only an example of 3x debt to EBITDA. But that's a number that people probably have heard in other things and are familiar with, of like, okay, that's not like a leveraged buyout, but it's also not like having net debt of nothing. There's some leverage on it. At that level, once you have cash build beyond that, then you would pay it out. The idea being that you're just not going to build up cash in this company. But this is different than the initial phase, which is all about returning capital. This is an ongoing thing, right? Mm-hmm. And if the cash was used for something else, then you wouldn't have as big a special dividend that year, right? Or if EBITDA fell down that year, you wouldn't have as good of one. If EBITDA rose more, the dividend would probably be higher. If there was less use of cash inside the business, higher, you know, and vice versa. So it would fluctuate a bit. And what we talk about there, and this part of the estimate is very hard to do because this is a penny stock. So while we hope to eventually split it, reverse split it, so it has 100x higher price because it'll have 100x less shares outstanding. It'll be easier to do these calculations. Right now, this is tough. But what I'm saying is cash returned annually during phase two. So this is after all the phase one stuff has gotten the balance sheet down to where you want it to be. From that point on, you would expect cash earnings likely to be paid out to be around 2 cents per share. That's very wobbly estimate, though. That's rounded off and stuff. But that is 5% dividend yield on current stock price. So Of course, the stock price is unlikely to be similar to the current stock price. It will either be higher, right? If you do like a lot of buybacks and stuff, then it will tend to be higher, or lower, because if you do a lot of special dividends, people will, of course, assume, okay, you've returned 10, 20 cents a share to me. That tends to knock off a lot of from the stock price. But what we're saying is on the current amount of shares today. So like if you're buying in today, what do you think would be the ongoing likely cash earnings return to me each year and stuff? About 1/20th of your share price, about 5%. The actual yield will look wildly different than that, because the number of shares outstanding right in phase one is going to change one way or the other. Not one way or the other, but the cash and the number of shares outstanding will change, probably. Probably there's going to be a lot fewer shares outstanding in the future, but we don't know. It depends on how big a buyback is.
How are you thinking about the range of outcomes for the EBITDA at the Georgia Park, right? So we're going to slim down the company, try to take costs out of the business. They obviously, the Georgia Park grew, the EBITDA grew exponentially through COVID, and it has pulled back a good amount. And then obviously they got hit by a tornado, so you're kind of coming out of that. Just curious to hear about what you think is a normalized figure, how you're thinking about this as you're thinking about what the valuation could be, how much you can pay out, how much debt you could pull on. Or put on it, and just kind of where your head is at with that.
Before COVID, EBITDA at Georgia was about $3 million roughly. And it the company will get better on that park, which will be its own subsidiary, will look better in terms of expenses pretty fast. Like advertising, for instance, and things like that, that will decline a lot, and so it'll look better on that basis. However, the park is not doing as well competitively as it was before COVID, right? Because you can see, anyone can see that, because they can say, okay, what's inflation? Well, you should be doing 1.2 times or more higher in terms of revenue and everything else, even if you're doing the same sort of numbers in terms of attendance and amount of food and beverage that you're serving in real terms and everything. So clearly declined since COVID. And then also your expenses are up, right? So even if it's a large fixed cost company, a large fixed cost operation, so it's a lot less efficient in those things. So it'll take a while to turn around. Someone new will come in with a lot of experience running other amusement parks, and they'll be incentivized, as will the team at Georgia, totally with bonuses driven by improvements in EBITDA. So they stand to make a lot of money if they improve EBITDA. A lot of money in cash and upfront, right? So they're highly incentivized that way. But that doesn't mean that it will happen. So we'll see. I think that this year will be bad. And then as we lap some of those numbers and stuff, you'll see things improve. And I think you'll see them improve first on the expense side and only later on the revenue side. So it'll take a little while. And that's why I think that Georgia will look better in 1 to 2 years than it does today, assuming we implement the things we're talking about. That's also why I think it's actually best not to sell the whole company now, or to try to sell Georgia immediately. I know there's people who want to do that, and that's fine. I just think it will look in much better shape, just in terms of it'll be more efficiently run in a year or two, just because it's deteriorated a lot in terms of efficiency. People can see then the costs and everything. It used to be able to make more money on the same amount of revenue than it does now, and that's deteriorated a lot over the COVID period, basically.
Let's talk investor relations. So you already hit on the reverse stock split, 1-for-100. We do think that's something that shareholders want, and so that's something that we've talked about. Do you want to give a summary on that, and then we could hit the rest of these as well?
Yeah.
Why we think it's important.
So if you look at how the stock trades, there's almost never trades of less than 100 shares, right?
Yeah.
It's a penny stock, and most people own a lot more shares than that. In fact, there's even small shareholders who might think that they own very, very few shares, even though they own 1,000 or something instead of 100, what we're talking about here. So people be cashed out on this, not on a big, who own 99 or fewer shares, not on a big basis, but it would eliminate that and get the share price to basically look cosmetically like a more normal price stock. The main appeals of that are generally stocks that have such low, stock prices. And of course the stock price is meaningless, right? It's just driven by how many shares outstanding they have. So it's the same pie, and you just cut up into more slices or less slices determines what the price looks like. So it's totally an optical illusion of that, but it gives the perception with some people that it is a more speculative company because it is in a class in terms of share price, when you're talking 20 cents, 40 cents, whatever, that these are very speculative companies there. So it's the highest quality company trading it for such a low price, right? You can just look, there's no company of this quality and of this longevity and everything that other companies that trade at these same prices. So it turns some people off of it and attracts people who are more speculative in their approach to it and who don't think seriously about what it's worth longer term and all that. I also think it helps in communicating some of the things we're talking about. And I wish that it was already reverse split 1-for-100 when I present these things to you about things like the dividend stuff. It's very difficult to talk to you in terms of saying about 2 cents or something, because then people think, mm-hmm. Oh, 1 cent or 3 cents, that's pretty close to two. No, it's radically different. And you would see that if it was $2, if a dividend was $2 or $1 or $3, you would know, oh, those are hugely different numbers. When I say 2 cents, it messes with your mind. It makes you think that that's not a big difference. And so it's much harder to present this plan in a clear way when we're dealing with numbers that look so small to people, because we have this tendency to use cents and round that off instead of saying, you know, 1.3 cents, you know, it's easier for people to think 13 cents, you know? So it's just a question of moving it in terms of an order of magnitude or two in this case. But I think it'll help everyone think mentally about it. So that would be good. It's just a little extra work to do it. And, you know, I don't know why the company hasn't done it in the past. I'm not sure, but I think it's just a little extra work part of it. Add a head of investor relations. So, obviously we're getting rid of the CEO job. I mean, you know, it's so people know that, you know, at corporate and stuff, there's some jobs that will be gotten rid of in terms of base salaries of people. And as we'll talk about later, those roles will be split sort of so that you have someone who's running a park and making a lot more money there on the operating side. If they do a good job, they'll make a lot more money. Their base salary isn't a lot more, but, and then you have someone, me, being unpaid at corporate doing those things. That means there'll be some money available for doing other things from that with the same level of corporate expenses or less. And what that will go into, in part, is a head of investor relations. And that will be doing things that is quarterly earnings calls we talked about. The company now says it does quarterly earnings calls, so it doesn't do Q&As, and it didn't do quarterly earnings calls before we said that we were going to. So I don't know if they really will continue with that or not. I think they just said they were doing that for the proxy fight. But we will do quarterly earnings calls with all the time spent on the Q&A part of it. And then we also said that we will do an in-person shareholder meeting at the Georgia Park. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that'll be good for the actual shareholders who've been in it a while and all of that. They'll get to see the park. We'll get to hear from everybody that way. Like I said, you have lots of people who have certificate form shares who've been in it for a long time, all of that. The other part that we'll do, though, is an investor day at a location that is easily accessible, which is not Georgia. So these parks are in rural areas. Georgia is in a place called Pine Mountain. The Georgia Park is in Pine Mountain, which is near Callaway Gardens and stuff. That's a bit of a tourist attraction, but this is not some place. It's not Atlanta, and it's certainly not New York and Chicago and LA and stuff that are more easily places where people who work in finance professionally tend to be. So there'll be two events. One event will be the actual shareholder meeting. That'll be great for hearing from the longer-term shareholders who've been in it and getting an idea of what they want and what they don't want. And again, a lot of Q&A with that. And the other one is people who maybe wouldn't have owned the stock before we got into it, right? And so that will be more the investor day, is that now that this company is changing so that it has a financial orientation rather than just being run more like, you know, however the large shareholder Chuck and stuff just wants to run it for whatever purposes, it'll be run now more like to be responsive to what shareholders and public companies generally want, right? And so a lot of that is they want financial results that are pretty good over time. They want dividends, they want buybacks, whatever. Now that people might get interested in that, that's all we'll have an investor day. So it's more for people, and it'll be someplace else that they can get to more easily and that they congregate naturally and stuff. And so that will allow those people to get interested, and that will change the shareholder base over time as people become more interested in that, whereas they might have been turned off by previous management control shareholder, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. And then we can talk about the way that the breakdown is going to be in management now, who will run what. I think here maybe it's important to talk about the history of the company and everything so that people understand this, because this is a little bit confusing. The company is totally remote right now. And so as a result, you see certain people saying they're the CEO and stuff. They're not really the CEO exactly. What's happening is this, they're running the public company part of it and doing all the public company CEO things you'd expect, but they're actually not running the biggest like operating subsidiary and stuff on the ground being there. And so there's several layers there of how that's run. A lot of companies generally do it where you have a CEO type person and then you have these GMs at each of the places. And that's not really how this company does it, right? So the difference here is that you obviously have the two non-performing parks, which will be sold off under this plan. And then you're going to be left with one operating subsidiary, right? Which is the Wild Animal Safari in Georgia. And so the division now will be more clearly between the holding company aspect to it, which is the public company part of it, and then the actual operations there on the ground in Georgia. So that will change people's titles, right? So what you can do now is that obviously you don't need someone to just have a title like GM, they can simply be president of Wild Animal Safari in Georgia. And so they're the head of that profit center in all respects. But that company is owned completely by Parks America, you know, a level up there. And so you now have a separation of the capital allocation, public company stuff from the other aspect of it. So now you have someone who can run Georgia, which is the only real operating business in this company that makes any money or anything. They can run it much as you would if it was a private company or something, right? And they don't have to be worried about the investor relations aspect of it. They aren't part of the board. They aren't, you know, any of that stuff. So they just run it as a profit center the same they would if it was part of a big giant company, right? It was one park among many, if it was a Six Flags or a, you know, Cedar Fair or whatever thing, or if it was just a private company. So they're focused 100% on the operating part of it, but they're not involved in any of the other stuff. Whereas right now you have a CEO who's like split on that, spending time on the public company stuff, spending time on trying to run the park and being remote to it at the same time. So what I'll be doing is the Parks America part, which is the holding company. So this will be unpaid, obviously. And then you have the Georgia park, and the pay there will be very different. So the president of Parks America will be someone who's me, just doing the capital allocation stuff, working on the plan that we just laid out, right? And the public company parts, the investor relations things that we talked about too. But the then actual subsidiary that's going to be making all the earnings is Georgia. And so the president there is going to have a base salary, you know, so it's not an unpaid position like me. It's going to be a base salary that's more normal, what someone might be paid to be a GM of this kind of thing, you know. And then you got your incentive compensation, which is driven by the EBITDA bonus plan that we've talked about. And my guess, and it is only a guess at this point, is that incentive compensation will be greater than half of this executive's pay, at least for the first year or two. We'll see later on. But so it'll be a fair base salary, though not exceedingly generous. And then most of the pay is probably going to come from that improvement in EBITDA.
So there'll be a high watermark on that EBITDA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're the high watermark thing is just that they have to improve EBITDA each year. Sure. Mm-hmm. Because the bonus is tied to an improvement in EBITDA each year. But this, for people who aren't in the industry and stuff, like, that's not very difficult to achieve generally. I mean, it depends. This park has had worsening situations since 2019 or so, like in terms of competitive situation, in terms of expenses, all that. So it's been going in the wrong direction. It obviously went up during COVID. But they all did, you know. But if you just look under the hood, the numbers aren't so good for the last half decade. The direction is the wrong direction. But normally in this industry, if you maintain a pretty similar competitive position, obviously at least on a nominal basis, you tend to have improving EBITDA over time. So a park that's already doing well, as long as it's well managed, tends to be able to at least get a little bit better EBITDA this year than last year. So it might sound to some people as being very aggressive. Oh, you don't get any bonus unless you have EBITDA this year that beat last year. But in the amusement business, that's not as tough as, you know, if you were in a cyclical chemical business. Yeah, you would be screwed in some years. But this way, you have the possibility to make a bonus. It's within your own control each year, pretty realistically. So yeah, you would only have additional bonuses after you had the initial, if you had additional improvements in EBITDA. And this will apply to all of the employees there too. So obviously it'll be less because they make less as their base pay and stuff, but as a percentage of their pay and stuff, it'll still be quite meaningful. So, you know, they'll get a nice bonus if they improve EBITDA each, year, each month. The opportunity for big bonuses is going to be pretty front-loaded, to be honest. The low-hanging fruit in terms of what can be improved at the park and stuff is stuff you're going to see in the first year to 2 years. After you've had someone there really executing for 2 years, it will become progressively more difficult to drive EBITDA higher all the time. But the good news is, like, the base will grow, right? It'll be a bigger operation. So for an individual, even though as a percentage of previous bonus or whatever, like, it may not sound as impressive of how much they can grow EBITDA relative to last year's EBITDA, the total amount of EBITDA will be bigger. So it'll be I think there'll be a much bigger bonus possibility for both the president of the park and for everyone else working at the park than I could imagine that you would ever see elsewhere in the industry. So, like, you'll be the most incentivized, the most possibility for a bonus will be here as compared to anywhere else. I think that will continue for years. But the really big opportunity is in making a lot of money in the first year or two improving things. Yeah, definitely. Because there's a lot that can be improved in the first year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then the board strategic growth committee will be replaced by a capital allocation committee. And obviously the committee will meet very frequently.
Yep.
Our whole plan is based on capital allocation. So that shouldn't be a surprise. That's everything that we are talking about here.
Yeah, and it's the plan that we've laid out. And so obviously that'll take a lot of the board's time. The board's main focus will be on selling off these parks, making sure that this is all done in the best manner in terms of getting the best prices on negotiating everything in all of your sales and stuff, saving as much as possible on taxes, not having wastage that way, returning capital in the way that makes the most sense, both in terms of not causing people to pay taxes they wouldn't otherwise need to pay, and again, like I said, the most bang for their buck in terms of deciding whether it's a dividend or a buyback. All those things are you know, they're not difficult. They're back of the envelope type stuff that anyone can do with a little basic arithmetic and a focus on capital allocation, but they're the things that'll be debated and decided, all those kind of events that we talked about. So the exit events of selling off the parks for the best prices, and then the return of capital events. And so you add those up, that's something happening every couple months for the next year or two, right? Like, that's what the plan looks like. So it's a lot of stuff for the board to handle, and that committee will be, that'll be what they'll be spending all their time on, basically.
You hit the how we're going to incentivize the employees and the president of Wild Animal Safari Georgia. I think you hit that pretty good already. I don't know if you have any final thoughts on that.
Oh, yeah. I do have thoughts on the bonus plan. I mean, so, you know, the bonus plan, like we laid out there, is just things of improving EBITDA. And so that's a big opportunity there. The thing is, like, I think that overall, so, you know, headcount is too high at the park and stuff. So headcount needs to be brought down, and you need to pay fewer people more money and get people to have buy-in on that stuff. And hopefully this, which will be cash bonuses and fairly regular, like we said, although we're talking about year-over-year improvements, so people understand that for financial reporting purposes, for shareholders, all that stuff, you do want to understand that, like, they're more frequent than that at the level of the people who'll be receiving them. It's not like people have to wait all year for this bonus. Obviously, hourly workers and stuff, that's not what they're interested in. So there'll be an opportunity to participate in a meaningful way to get nice bonuses fast if these improvements happen. And a lot of it will be through teamwork on that stuff. So that's a really big part of it. And they have a lot of control over that. Both the president of that park and the people working there are going to have a lot of control over the expense side of it, right? And that's the part where you can see the initial improvement big time. It's going to take more time for the revenue improvement stuff, and that is a little bit harder for everyone at all levels to participate in driving that. I think they'll figure out ways to do that eventually, but initially that's not the low-hanging fruit in what they can improve. So these are mostly going to be a team effort at that park to drive improvements in expense control and honestly reduction in a bunch of things to have gains in productivity, which then you, because you make these bonuses and stuff. Whereas if you had the same gains in productivity, but it goes all to the owner, they might not be as incentivized as much to seek those productivity gains. I actually honestly think that also the fact of having the president physically there in Georgia, which has not been the case before with this company, and the incentive bonus, that combination already is going to drive a lot of the improvement, to be honest, anyway. But, and the other thing to keep in mind is these bonuses will cause good years for the company to look worse and bad years to look better, right? It's going to have a dampening effect in terms of results. So if people are thinking, oh, EBITDA will surge up and that'll be great, yes, EBITDA will go up, but a lot of that EBITDA won't be shared with employees, right? And then in years where EBITDA doesn't improve, not such a good year for the company, you won't have that bonus expense, right? So it's just something to keep in mind for the stock that people aren't used to seeing, that obviously because of that, it dampens the results. The results will tend to look more steady as a result. And that's because you're really sharing it with them as if they are owners in the improvements of it. And like we said, no bonuses be paid when there's no year-over-year improvement in EBITDA. That's pretty understandable that way. You know, these things aren't going to be redone so that without those improvements. But the thing is, they're not at the most efficient they could be right now. So like that part of it, the not being paid the bonus, would be a big deal if the park was already a stellar performer right now. It's really not. Like I said, I think someone that's disguised by COVID and inflation, people may not realize to what extent it's not optimal right now, but it isn't optimal. There's stuff that can be improved, and so that bonus is more hittable than you might think. So I think you can achieve those goals and have a realistic chance at bonus just because you're starting from a spot that is not, you know, there's fat that can be taken out of the business and things that can be improved. So I think that that will be exciting for the people there, obviously. And that's the thing that is most exciting to me for implementing and stuff that I think will get the best results. Unfortunately, I think for the vote, who cares, right? Like, you know, it's the returns of capital and stuff is what shareholders are used to hearing about, not this bonus plan sure. stuff. But I think the bonus plan and the change in management and stuff, I think that's going to be really exciting long term. That's where the real gains are going to come from. But, you know, it's not stuff you can promise in the same simple figures as paying out a dividend and doing a buyback of a certain size. So I think markets always tend to be a little more short-term focused, a little more financially focused than on this idea of longer-term operational improvements, which is where a lot of the eventual value will really come from.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, any final thoughts, Jeff, on the plan? We hit on a good amount of it here today. Like I said, we put it out in a press release. It's on our website, and now we're also doing a video / podcast on it as well. Any other general thoughts?
My general thoughts are the same as like we talked about to wrap up last time we did a podcast on it for the special meeting where we got a majority. So it worked out well. But we got to do the same thing again. And my ending thoughts are basically the same, which is, look, like we said, not taking payment for anything we're doing here. What we get paid for is performance of the fund, and the fund owns the stock. And so if you have the dividends and the stock price go up and stuff, then we will make money off of that because we have a fee structure, which is based in, there's no management fee. So it's based entirely on an incentive fee for us, which is just stock performance, right? So we might be right, we might be wrong, but we're 100% financially motivated. And so our focus is on that financial alignment with the shareholders, right? About that, that's what we're trying to do, is get you a financial result. And then the other one is on the shareholder aspect of it, that we'll hold these annual meetings and stuff and we'll have votes. The big difference here is that basically it's broken down to the point where it's just a fight between us and Chuck. The rest of the, you know, you've already seen a bunch of people have quit the board, that you have people that aren't going to be the same people next time. You obviously see that there's John Gannon isn't there anymore. Dale isn't on the ballot. They threw me on their side of the proxy, right? So it's no longer a point where it's even the same board that it was when we started this. The other side's interests, I don't know what they are, but they aren't just financial, and they aren't going to hold annual meetings in the future, right? So this will be your last annual meeting if that side wins. You know, you could see that because people can see in court that after they performed badly at the special meeting, they wanted to dilute the stock, right? To avoid having to have this annual meeting. They wanted to not hold the special meeting. They only held the special meeting. They only hold the annual meeting to avoid having the special meeting, but we didn't not have it, right? So I don't know if it will work out better or worse for you, depending on who wins. I know that it won't be run with financial objectives in mind, and that you won't get to vote again if the other side wins. And with our side, that is what you'll get. We'll run it for financial reasons, and you'll get to vote every year. So I think that's the difference. How well we execute on the plan and stuff, I don't know, but that our only interests are financial is the difference between the two sides. They're not going to let a plan like this, right? And they're not going to say, well, where they're going to hold their annual meetings and when and stuff. People can see we're having this meeting in June. The company's fiscal year ends in the end of September, right? So they're having it later than companies that normally have their fiscal year end in December. So, you know, that's the difference between the two sides. And We can't promise results, but we can promise that we'll have this focus completely on just what it does for your stock. Because that's what we care about too. And that's the common interest of all shareholders.
Mm-hmm. And implementing a great plan for employees, the president, where everyone can make a lot of money, right?
Oh, absolutely. But I'm just saying, understand that, look, we have no interest to be particularly kind to employees. The whole purpose of the bonus is because we think that that's really good for the employees making more money, but only making more money because they're making even more money for owners over time by doing that. What I'm saying is, like, yeah, there's probably lots of people who like to pay people a lot of money, but we're not doing it out of the goodness of our heart. We're doing it because we think that this is something that drives results for owners over time. So we'll pay very big bonuses, bigger bonuses than people would ever make otherwise. They will make more money this way. Mm-hmm. But the reason that they'll make more money is because it's in the interest for the shareholders, right?
Mm-hmm. Got it. Cool. Well, three dates I want to hit on again that you need to remember today is May 8th. The record date to be able to vote at the annual meeting is May 13th. And then the actual annual meeting is June 6th. So continue to follow our website, PRK Proxy Fight, to get information about the vote, more stuff that we are going to put out. You could follow me on Twitter or X at Focused Compound. And of course, if you're watching the screen right now, you could reach out to our proxy solicitor, John Grau at Investor.com. I will put his email and information down below. If you have any other questions or anything that you want to run by Jeff or myself, you could reach out to me at Andrew@FocusedCompounding.com. I want to thank everybody so much for tuning in with us on this podcast here today, where we talk about our plan for Parks America. And we will see you in the next podcast. Take care.